A local beekeeper has stirred up a hornet's nest about a pesticide with an impossible-to-pronounce name and the questionable science that the EPA used to approve it. For more, here's How on Earth's Shelley Schlender.
And good morning to Tom, and good morning to Daniel, and good morning to Tom Theobald, our expert this morning, to talk about a pesticide that's known as clothianidin. Now, how did I do on that name, Tom?
Well, I think there are probably variations. I pronounce it clothianidin.
Well, there you go. So
that's close enough.
But it is a pesticide that's causing a lot of problem among scientists right now and among beekeepers, because we really don't know whether there's any good science saying whether or not it's safe or not. That's the conclusion that's actually now been broken by the EPA, saying that they want to reexamine the study that approved this pesticide, what was it, about 7 years ago?
The study was completed in August of 2006 and approved by the EPA in November of 2007.
Oh, okay. So a bit more recently than I was saying, but it is a study that was at first approved and now is, according to the EPA, officially a study that might need to be reviewed. And you are at the heart of, maybe you could say, the center of the buzz about what the problems have been with this study. You've been one of the people who's pushing to make sure that there gets to be another review of the study. And you've been pushing so hard that yesterday at 4 a.m. in the morning, I got a call from an EPA scientist explaining to me that he was somebody who had been involved in looking at the review of this information. And if I called this certain PR person at the EPA, their media specialist, then perhaps we could get permission to have him be on the air. That was the 4 a.m. call yesterday morning. After five calls to different people in the EPA searching out how to get permission, we were having this great email conversation about what questions to ask with the EPA scientist about this this pesticide. All of that was going well. And then I got an email yesterday afternoon from one of the chief media people at EPA saying, "Shelley, I've just learned that it would be premature at this time to discuss the reanalysis of this study. The review is still coming together and isn't ready for public discussion. I'm sorry, but we have to decline the interview." I wrote back and said, "Well, when can we do the interview then?" And they said, "We don't know yet." So at this point, I can say that the EPA has declined to be on air with us. We are eager to have a time where they can be on air with us. Tom Theobald, are you a scientist?
No, I'm not a scientist. I'm a beekeeper.
Well, you're the best we've got today. Plus the fact that we do have a toxicologist from Europe, who is a self-employed toxicologist who has agreed to be with us this morning. Good morning, Hank. Dr. Tenney.
Good morning. Good morning.
Yes, I hear that you're a researcher at the Experimental Toxicology Services in Zutphen, Netherlands. And it's important for our listeners to know that you are a self-employed toxicologist. You're not representing any government agency.
But that's correct.
But you too have concerns about the pesticide that we're going to talk about this morning.
Oh, yes, I do.
All right. Well, let's start with that hard-to-pronounce pesticide again. You say it, Tom Theobald.
I say clothianidin.
What is it? Can you explain it? Can you give us a quick layperson's explanation of what this pesticide is? Yes.
As I understand it, clothianidin is a chlorinated nicotine compound, a neonicotinoid.
Now, when people hear the word nicotine in a pesticide, they tend to assume that it's a natural product, that it's something that is, you know, made out of tobacco leaves or something. However, this is in the class of pesticides where there's been some molecular changes to it to make it very different from something natural. Is that a good characterization?
Well, I refer to it as being amped up.
Okay, amped up like a leaf on cocaine or something.
Yes.
Okay. So how about it? As a toxicologist, Dr. Tenneke, is this a natural product or is this a powerfully changed product through chemicals?
This is a changed product.
All right, so it's a changed pesticide. And right now it's being reevaluated by the EPA. It's a tricky situation because this is one of the most widely used pesticides now in the world, perhaps. Is that correct?
That's correct. I'm a bit surprised, too, because the EPA memorandum points to two crucial aspects of this chemical, that it's prone to cause groundwater contamination, and that it's highly toxic to honeybees, and that there is a risk of chronic toxicity and to honeybees, and which may lead to instability of the hive.
Now, Dr. Tenneke, is this a pesticide that is used throughout Europe, or have some countries banned pesticides in this class?
Well, France has never registered clothianidine, but it is allowed in my own country.
And just for our listeners to know, you're very concerned that the decline in insects as a result of the use of this pesticide might be leading to a decline in birds.
That's correct. In my book, I've put all the pieces of the puzzle together and confirmed what many have suspected for at least 6 years, that a new class of revolutionary pesticides is killing off vast numbers of bees, butterflies, spiders, bumblebees, caterpillars, earthworms, and creatures who live in the soil. Along with the insects, these pesticides are killing off the birds and animals which depend on insects for their food. Skylarks, corn buntings, partridges, tree sparrows, and dozen more species.
All right, Dr. Tenneke, and so that is your hypothesis, that this pesticide might be linked to a decline of birds. And our listeners can learn more by looking for your book online. And what is the name of your book?
It's called The Systemic Insecticides, A Disaster in the Making. And it's available for $10 from the websites lulu.com and disasterinthemaking.com.
Well, thank you for that information. And now we're going to go back to Tom Theobald. Tom, you started this hornet's nest really last summer with an essay in a beekeeper's journal where you described the test that had been used to approve clothianidine.
Yes.
And you described it as I'll let you describe it. You used the analogy of cows that were put in a field to test for a noxious weed.
What was done, the test colonies consisted of four colonies in 2.5 acres of canola planted from treated seed, but those bees were free to forage over thousands of acres, and I used the analogy of testing a noxious weed with cattle, putting four cattle on 2.5 acres, but they would be free to roam over thousands of acres, and that noxious weed would not be represented in their diet. This is junk science. This is snake oil science, in my view.
And let me just, it's a little bit to get my mind around what this study was about. So you're saying if you had cows and you were testing to see if a weed was poisonous and you surrounded them with the poisonous weed, that would be a good study, except if you kept the gate open so that they could leave the place where the noxious weeds are and go out wherever they wanted to and get good-tasting food that didn't have noxious weeds in it. And then you tested their stomachs for noxious weed and you tested them for health. It really would not have been a test of that noxious weed.
Exactly.
And with these bees, they were put into an area where there was a concentrated amount of this new pesticide in a small area. But then around them, there was this huge foraging area for the honeybees that did not have the pesticide sprayed.
Bees typically will forage out a mile, 2 miles, several thousand acres, and these bees most certainly did.
And that's what the EPA initially used as at least part of their reason for approving this pesticide as safe for honeybees.
Yes. This was the critical study. This was the study upon which the conditional registration was given, the completion of which cleared the way for full registration.
And it's been interesting watching the EPA's response to the fact that you have been like a mosquito buzzing around them night and day, one small person buzzing and buzzing and buzzing, but in this case you're a honeybee buzzing. Because on the EPA website itself, there has been a change in policy, starting with some memos saying this is of no concern, basically. Pay no attention to that man who's buzzing around us, to now statements saying we are thinking that we are going to reevaluate this study. We don't think that it was valid science.
Correct. I want to say right here that I believe that most EPA employees want to do the right thing. I think this is primarily a management failure, and the management philosophy at this point seems to be duck and cover.
Well, it's hard to sort out. It sounds to me like you're looking for science. You're not confident about the EPA because it gave you bad science as the way that it made a decision.
It's not only bad science, it's no science. And we're prepared to stand behind the science properly done. We believe that well-done science will reveal the effect and the consequences of this chemical.
And the reason this chemical is a concern to you is because honeybee populations are declining seriously right now.
We have the observations of beekeepers with decades of experience and thousands of colonies, and we believe there's little doubt of the connection between this pesticide and the bee losses. It certainly isn't the only cause, but we believe it's a major cause, and we believe that there are implications far beyond the bees.
Well, and there are implications far beyond this issue in that I hear you saying that we simply don't know. We don't have a way to know from our regulatory agencies whether this particular pesticide is safe or not, even though it's now one of the most widely used pesticides in the world when it comes to the safety for honeybees, because you can't see any good science that was used in the initial study.
No, that's correct. And we're prepared to stand behind properly done science, broadly done.
What kind of study would you like to see?
Well, I don't know that I can answer that at this point, but I think the science has to be comprehensive. It has to look at the interactions of these pesticides. It has to look at the consequences of this pesticide over time. There's something called the risk cup model, which means that there, you can have the same effect from very small quantities of a pesticide over time as you would have by an acute incident of a large exposure.
And Dr. Tenneke, would you like to comment?
Yes. Well, I've spent a lifetime studying carcinogens, chemicals that trigger cancer. I'm not a beekeeper, but I became interested in these insecticides when I realized that they act just like carcinogens and share very similar qualities. The damage they cause to the nervous system is cumulative and virtually irreversible, and there may not be a safe level of exposure. And I've published on this topic in the journal Toxicology in July of this year.
Now, between the two of you, between you, Dr. Tenneke, and you, Tom Theobald, we don't exactly have a balanced perspective here. We don't have the other view here, the EPA, which at this point has said that they're reexamining this study. It's been very hard to find scientists who will talk with us from the other point of view, from Bayer Corporation, which makes this pesticide. In fact, we did call them. I called them last week. And their PR person got back to me and said he would check and see, but they never called me back. So we would like to have a more rounded version of what's happening in this situation, but we just have you. So I'm going to ask you a few more questions. If there are problems with this pesticide, could it be not because the pesticide itself is dangerous, but because there's a misapplication of the chemical, meaning that in the field, farmers, sprayers are not using it as it's supposed to be used?
No, it's being used exactly as it was intended to be used, as a seed coating. It's not a question of application or misapplication.
I agree.
So both of you are saying that you think it's the pesticide itself. Is there new science that says that it's more complicated to understand and tease out the interaction of these pesticides than we thought? Could it be that when this study was first done, this was about the best kind of science we had?
This is not science.
Well, you know, Tom, I would argue with you on that, except even today, the EPA is not arguing with you any longer.
EPA has not agreed to do any science at this point.
But they have said that they are reevaluating the study that they did once before.
They have already reevaluated it.
And they're saying that there's a certain kind of wording that they used on their website about how it's no longer considered, and then there were some rather complicated words.
They're playing high-stakes Scrabble. They'd prefer to hide behind word games.
I think what the words were saying is that they don't think the study is valid either. I think that that's what the study was saying, but I agree with you.
That's what the two reviewers have said. The EPA as a whole is ducking and covering. They're hiding.
I did not see on the EPA website a way for a step forward on what they were saying that they would do. What is the next step you would like to see them do?
I would like to see broad science conducted under the control of experienced beekeepers and bee researchers so that we don't have a repeat of this faulty science.
Are you then suggesting that when the EPA develops their plan and shares it, first of all, you want to have citizen pressure, those bees buzzing around the EPA, to keep them deciding that they won't keep putting this off? You want them to start making a decision now about
what
they'll
do. This has to be done immediately. This is a critical winter for the beekeepers. We're about at the end of our rope, and we can't last much longer.
All right, so the beekeepers would like to have a decision now, not something delayed another 1 year, 2 years, 10 years.
This needs to be done either this growing season or this product needs to be removed from the market.
Well, what kind of study would you like to see? Is it something where when the EPA suggests a study, which you want to have started soon, you would like to have some input into whether or not you think the study is valid?
Well, I'd like to have more than input. I'd like to have the beekeepers in the driver's seat along with everybody else. And I don't know what the study should be, but I think that it should be evolved through conversation amongst all of us.
That would be a kind of a complicated way to do science.
Well, this is a complicated issue. This is $262 million a year in Bayer's coffers. The beekeeping industry represents $15 billion contribution to American agriculture. This is a very critical issue. This isn't something insignificant.
All right. Well, thank you for sharing these ideas and these issues with us today. We have just a little bit of time left, and unfortunately, we're in an awkward place. We're a science show. We're not just talking about science here. We're talking about the lack of science and ways to kind of push it back into being science. And we don't have the answer yet to this. Where can people go for more information on this issue?
I would suggest that they go to the Boulder County Beekeepers website, bouldercountybeekeepers.org. Most of the story is there. The press release is there, the background information, the article that I did in July for Bee Culture. I believe that people need to educate themselves at this point and form their own opinions. They don't have to rely on my judgment. It's all there for them to see.
All right. Well, thank you. So go to the Boulder Beekeepers Association website for more information. And here on How on Earth, we'll keep trying to have the EPA respond to us with their scientists. Thank you again. I'm Shelley Schlender. We've been talking with Tom Theobald and Dr. Henneke.